All right. Well, it gets windy in Florida during spring training. Hence, our Florida correspondent, Kevin Barker, who joins us now, has retreated to the comfort of the press box at TD Ballpark. Instead of standing or sitting outside in the middle of the wind tunnel at the Player Development Complex. How you doing, Barker?
How you doing, man? Hey, you know what I wanted to do is I wanted to watch Yerio Rodriguez throw some live batting practice, and I can't even do that because, you know, unless I laid down under the bleachers, there's no way I could get out of the wind.
And I'd pay just, to see that.
Canada would be up in arms if they couldn't hear me talk for 30 minutes. So I thought I'd run over here and try and, you know, talk what we had to talk about and have a good time doing it.
Yeah, I'm still more interested in dead batting practice than live batting practice. I don't know why people call it live batting practice. It's like a new record. People say they set a new record or they broke the old record. No, it's a record. It's a record. It's not an old record or a new record. It's a record. It's the same thing. Live BP. Live BP. Live human beings. I don't get it.
Leave it to you to overthink it. Like, once again, I just make this real simple for you. Live batting practice means somebody actually is standing there that has a heartbeat, that's hitting off a dude throwing to him. I mean, that's basically what it is. But leave it to old Jeff Blair to way overthink it and make a thing about it. Throw his hands in the air and give him something to old man off my yard.
No, it's just it's anyhow. I know, I understand. It's different than batting practice where you have the manager throw. I just always just kind of laugh. Live batting practice. All right, so Yariel Rodriguez is throwing live batting practice today against Biggio, Danny Jansen, and Joey Votto. Explain to me what the Jays' plan is with Yariel Rodriguez today. And he's a guy that basically we've forgotten about him because I think it's pretty clear he's a veteran Cuban guy they've signed. It's pretty clear that he is going to start the year in AAA. They need to get him built up. They, according to his contract, only have options on him this year. So next year there will be no options. They won't be able to option him down to the minors. I mean, if you're going to do it, and build them up, this is kind of your year to do it. However, Kevin, at the same time, we are kind of getting hints, aren't we, that Alek Manoah is a little farther behind than we may have thought. So how does all this play in? Yariel Rodriguez, Kevin Gausman, and Alek Manoah, kind of the three pitchers that I wouldn't say there's some concern about them right now, but the three pitchers whose availability for opening day are at least have a few question marks around him.
Yeah, it sounds like Kevin Gausman, you know, will probably be ready for the opening week, just not opening day. I think that's sort of where they're at is, you know, they're looking at that sweet spot where it's 75 pitches. Can he throw 75 pitches and actually then go to his next outing, call it what you want, outing, start, up and down, and actually be able to throw to a live human standing in the batter's box. So I think that's sort of where they're at with that. They have enough time to get him where he needs to be. Doesn't sound like that was a problem. It just sounds like he was ramped up, getting it going too fast. You go too fast, you're his age, things tend to go south, and now they're being real cautious, which they should because he's a big deal to that rotation. Getting him where he needs to go, sounds like he'll get there, just won't be the opening day guy. With Alek Manoah, I don't think they have any idea. Like, I know he's throwing, you know, some soft toss in the outfield. When you hear soft toss in the outfield this late in spring training with a starter, it just sounds like they really don't have any idea. Yariel Rodriguez sounds like they have a plan. Sounds like the plan is in place. There hasn't been any hiccups to where, you know, they have to change that plan. Sounds like he'll have his live batting practice today, which is two up and downs. That's 20 pitches per inning. It sounds like execution. Doesn't sound like velocity. They got two lefties and a righty facing him, which now he can throw what he'll have to throw to a lefty. He'll throw what he has to throw to a righty. You know, they probably need to see how it comes out of his hand, The mechanics, the finish, everything that Pete Walker and John Schneider need to see to allow him to, the next time he pitches will be in a live game where the heart rate goes up. He'll have to run with his team onto the field, whether that's the minor leagues, whether that's, you know, live action in spring training game. So I think they're excited about that. But, you know, the easy way to look at it, one of the three will be pitching opening week. The other two, you know, one, Yariel Rodriguez, for sure not. Alec Manoah just doesn't seem like he's ready, ready to go just yet.
So if that is the case, I mean, clearly the focus remains or gets even brighter, I would think, on Bowden Francis and Mitch White, who, you know, are the two guys who are competing for, I guess, that open, we can call it an open rotation spot right now. Interesting hearing John Schneider talk a little bit about Mitch White. And, you know, Mitch White has impressed people in spring training with his velocity. But John kind of made an interesting point. He said, look, it's not just a matter of velocity. It's also a matter of being able to carry the strike zone with your secondary stuff. In other words, it's not simply, it's great to have velocity. It's great to get ahead 0-2. But if you get ahead 0-2 and then miss the next two pitches, your secondary stuff, I mean, you're undoing all the good you've done with that velo. That's kind of where we are with Mitch White, isn't it? It's still kind of that, the fine-tuning aspect of things with Mitch White.
Yeah, boy, you're nice today. You're nice with the fine-tuning comment. Look, for me...
No, because Mitch White and Bowden Francis are competing for jobs. I mean, they are. And everybody gets excited about Mitch White. Just let me finish. Everybody gets excited about Mitch White because of the velocity, but the velocity isn't the velocity isn't the thing. Like, Mitch White will probably be in the bullpen, right?
Yeah, it's not a competition. Bowden Francis, for me, will be making a start first week of the season because of who's not starting with the five guys that they thought would be the five first guys that they want to run out there. And then there's everybody else. And Mitch White is in that everybody else. He's a long relief guy for me. Like, he hit 98. He ain't pitching at 98. And for me, it will always be throwing strike one. Last year, he threw strike one 50% of the time. He didn't have good enough stuff to do that. How has that changed? I haven't seen that change. I've watched every time he's went out there on the mound. He looked the same old Mitch White he looked last year, except he's throwing a little hard because he hasn't thrown as much. I mean, he didn't throw a lot last year. He hadn't thrown a lot in the offseason. He hadn't thrown a lot yet in spring training. So for us to come on here and say that he's fighting for a job, and I think we also have to remember he was traded for, right? And I guess the depth part of it, where it comes to experience and who they got him from, and he is out of options, is a big deal. Like, they throw more emphasis into that than I do. Me, personally, think you take the best north. Is he one of the best guys north? I would think everybody being healthy and everything's equal, absolutely not. But when guys are hurt and you have to fill in the blanks, and who do you want to give the start to? Realistically, with who you've seen throw, let's not overthink it.
I had said I'd give Bowden Francis the start, but I think there is still the idea out there that there is, yeah, maybe they're saying that because you don't want to come out in the middle of spring training and guarantee a guy a job. But I mean, I think you're right. I think Bowden Francis gets the edge. And you know, based on what we've seen, Bowden Francis would certainly deserve it. Let's talk about the infielders a little bit. J.D. Davis has now been released by the San Francisco Giants. A loophole in the collective bargaining agreement that I didn't know existed, and clearly J.D. Davis didn't either. Didn't know it existed. He's been released by the Giants. A lot of people are going to look at the Blue Jays and say they need another third baseman. They don't necessarily view it that way, do they?
I mean, they got a plethora of JDs. I could say that as nicely as I can say it. I don't exactly know what he would bring. Can he play third? I guess. I mean, is he going to hit in the middle of the order? No, he'd be a 6 or 7 or 8 hole hitter for the Blue Jays. Is that something that you're going to have to go out and think about ways to get him on the team and make roster moves? And I don't get it. Like, I just sounds to me like the people that I've talked to, they're okay for a little while with IKF playing third because of the way he plays defense. And they think offensively, with everybody else living up to what everybody thinks they should be, you can throw IKF in there enough and sort of hide him offensively that it ain't really going to hurt your team. And I don't know if you can argue with that. Again, you can't have nine Mike Trouts on your team. Like, there has to be a couple of guys that are...
Well, you can. The Dodgers do. You can. You can have nine Mike Trouts.
The Jays are not going to... The Jays are not going to spend a bazillion dollars. They're just not going to do it. Like, it's just not the way it works in Blue Jay land. So, occasionally, you're going to have to fill in the blanks. And I think they're okay with that run prevention part of it, with the left side of their infield, one of those guys occasionally, you know, some of the time, most of the time, being IKF. And again, I said this to you yesterday. When Joey Votto, because they seem like they have a lot of faith in him, when he's ready to go, giving you a professional at bat, hitting with a dude at second, they'd rather have him than somebody else, say Vogelbach or whoever else is, Horowitz, whoever else is left-handed, that you may have to put Turner there, DH of Votto, because that's your best lineup. I like that. If you're a Jays fan, you have to like that. It's just the way it's going to be in 2024. So, yeah, I don't know. I think you put more stock in that guy being released than a lot of people, at least the people that I've talked to. Again, I wouldn't be shocked because Joey Votto's here. He's 40. I mean, he's sitting on a park bench 2 weeks ago saying that, where are you at, GMs? And now he's a Blue Jay. So I wouldn't be shocked, but I would be the first guy, if he came here, to ask you why. It just doesn't make any sense. And hopefully they'll move on and they'll figure things out. I have talked to some people about approaches. Approaches seem to be better. Guys individually are going up. You see Vladdy trying to pull more balls. You see in certain counts with certain people on base, that's a big deal. You see other guys having sort of the same approach, Springers of the world, who are, you know, having approaches to their strength. That's why I think they can get to that level that everybody wants them to be to.
Ernie Clement, the manager, had a few things to say about Ernie Clement today. Ernie Clement hit a couple of home runs off major league pitchers. He's put some good numbers up against major league pitchers. You've talked about Ernie Clement when he came up last year, just how professional he was and how he is precisely the type of guy you want on the bench, somebody that maybe doesn't play for 2 or 3 days and then can go out there. And I think we're comfortable with Ernie Clement defensively, but you had a chance to talk to John Schneider a little bit about him offensively. And the Jays have noticed a change in Ernie Clement, haven't they?
Yeah, I think he gets back to that approach, right, is you want to see graduation for certain guys. He's an elite contact guy. He's not going to walk a ton. He's not going to strike out a ton, right? He's sort of that odd guy where, you know, when you're thinking minor leaguers, you sort of want one or the other. You want the guy to work counts, walk, or – you know, you want the opposite end of that. He's sort of trying to mesh the two together. He is very aggressive. He's a contact guy. He can use the entire field. He has a flat swing. It's compact. That's why I say he's okay for me as a guy sitting over there for 2 or 3 days, come off and look like he's been playing those 3 days he's been sitting over there. And now you're seeing the approach of him trying to, you know, create a little loft in his swing and try and hit the ball to the big part of the field in the air. And be rewarded. Now, again, it's Florida, windy. You see me in a different kind of room. I can't be outside because of how windy it is. So I wouldn't read too much into him hitting a homer, but I would read into him driving the ball earlier in counts, which graduating, getting to that next level, trying to impress, to make a team, to take himself to a next level, to make it hard for them to send him down to the minor league. So you got to love it. Like, I've been preaching that forever. I mean, all John had to do is call me. I could have told him this and save him some time. But now they're starting to see it, and I think they like it, and he's going to have a good chance, I think.
Yeah, there really is a difference, isn't there? Because last year Ernie Clement came into camp, and I don't think anybody thought that he had a chance of making the major league roster. I'm sorry, when he joined the Blue Jays, I think people just looked at him as kind of a depth guy. But this year, it's different, isn't it, when you come in and you can kind of smell that roster spot. I mean, you get a little taste of the big leagues. You get the, you know, the big league lifestyle, a little bit of the meal money and all that good stuff. It's different when a guy comes into camp and says, man, I've got a shot at making this team, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like David Snyder, right? David Snyder did things with upper half, create a little loft with the bent upper half to the full side? How do you get in the air? How do you be noticed at the minor leagues? Dudes can't locate all the time. They don't know my weakness is the elevated fastball, so I'm going to create a little off to be noticed because of where I was drafted and where I'm at in an organization. He's done that. Now you have to adjust to that. You got to stand a little taller. You got to make some adjustments. Ernie Clement's no different, right? You try to impress. It's a level. I ain't saying it's process, but it's one of those things where a fringe 25th, 26th guy has to go home, look himself in the mirror, and go, hey, what can I do to take me to the next level? I'm this, I'm that. Can I turn myself into something else to where I make it real tough for a team, a contending team, to send me down and not put me on a big league team? So I think they like it. Again, I don't think you can make a team in spring training because of where the Blue Jays are at. Well, you can make it real tough for an organization to not put you on it. Mm-hmm. I think there's a big difference because of the changes you make. His change is not mechanical. It's not physical. It's a mindset. I want to be more aggressive early with the same bat path, which is level, not creating an uppercut or any of those things, but I want to drive certain pitches. So if I get an elevated fastball, middle, thigh high, up, I can drive that to the gap to right center for a double instead of taking it, working counts, you know, having that competitive 17-hop single right field. So, yeah, you got to love it, right? It's a competition a little bit between him and certain other guys. And to set you apart, you got to do certain things. And I think just by John coming out and answering the question and being as positive as he has, Ernie Clement, hats off to you. You've done it.
The Jays and Yankees will get at it today at 1:07 p.m. in Dunedin. The Jays lineup is Springer, Bichette, Turner, Varsho, Kirk, Kiermaier, Kiner Falefa, Espinal, Horwitz, Jose Berrios on the mound for the Blue Jays. Kevin, obviously the focus in the Blue Jays camp is on the Blue Jays, but we're going to be joined by Andy Martino of SN Sportsnet New York in a few minutes to talk about the news about Gerrit Cole still waiting for the results of his MRI. I know John Schneider was asked about it today. I know everybody focuses on their own job and what they got to do in spring training, but I got to think there'll be a lot of people in the AL East constantly refreshing their devices, trying to figure out if there's any news on Gerrit Cole. That could be a game changer for this division, could it? Even if Gerrit Cole needs to miss 2 months, that's a game changer.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, he's the best pitcher in the American League. You lose the best pitcher in the American League, especially with what you've added in Soto to your offense. You think you're scoring more runs. You need to keep the other team from scoring, right? It makes it easier for an Aaron Boone to not worry about the first guy. He can worry about the other four guys now, make it a little easier. I know it's changed my pick. I was picking the Yankees to win the American League East. I ain't doing that no more. I mean, what I've seen from the Orioles, the way they hit, and now if Gerrit Cole's going to be out for a little while, yeah, like that changes things a lot. It makes it a little easier for people to pick the Orioles, not the Yankees, and I'm in that boat. But, again, I still think the Yankees are going to score a ton of runs. It's going to be not the easiest of gets for the American League East because of what the owner has said that the Yankees are trying to do. I mean, basically, the Yankees have had enough of losing. You know, and I think if you're a Yankees fan, you're sort of happiest of hearing that. But again, I just don't know how they overcome that.
Yeah.
2 months of not having Gerrit Cole. I mean, you could basically pencil in 15 wins. I know people roll their eyes at wins, but it's a big deal when you're number one dude and your team wins most of the time when he starts. It's a big deal because now you don't have to worry about those wins, right? You're worried about the other wins and the other guys that are running out there. So, yeah, if you're Boone, yeah, you're sort of scrambling, trying to figure out other things, put pressure on other parts of your game. Got to run the bases better. Yeah, you got to be better with who you put in the lineup. You know, they're an older team. You got to be careful about how you attack the rest of spring training to make sure everybody else, when opening day rolls around, is in the lineup. So, yeah, there's some fog going around Yankees. The Yankees?
Well, and not only that, Aaron Judge, we find out this morning, won't be swinging the batter, won't be taking part in a game for probably till the end of the week. And he had an MRI in his ab and his abdominal muscles. And, you know, I mean, Yankees Twitter being what it is, with Yankees writers, nobody trusts the Yankees medical people because the Yankees medical people have not had a good, they've not had a good two seasons. But again, MRI and abs, I mean, for Aaron Judge, and we know Aaron Judge, you made the point. Aaron Judge is a big human. There's a lot. There's a lot of muscle tissue there. There's a lot of stuff that can get hurt. So, yeah. It's really strange. You know, the more and more you look into this, our friend Ken Rosenthal had an article with Dr. Keith Meister, who's the Texas Rangers. The Texas Rangers team physician. He's also an orthopedic specialist. He does a lot of surgeries and players for other teams as well. And he's expressing a lot of concern about the pitching injuries he's seen this spring. You get injuries every spring, but his concern is that there's, you know, a lot of the injuries are resulting from guys doing stuff that analytics folks are telling them to do. And it's just, it's just not working physiologically or physically for them. And I know there's Major League Baseball. I believe, I don't know if this started last year, but they've got a committee looking into essentially very quietly into what is kind of going on here. And it really does, you know, again, nothing good happens between the start of spring training and open day, but, I don't know, Kevin. Maybe it's just teams are more cautious now than they used to be, right? You made the point about how, you know, go get some duct tape and go out there. Maybe teams are just more cautious, but it does seem as if a lot of guys are getting hurt, and you know, a lot of guys are having MRIs, and we're still 2 weeks away from the start of the regular season. It's not like it's on the eve of the regular season.
Yeah, it's almost like it's not if, it's when. I mean, it's just
exactly,
so hard.
Yes.
Yeah, and to your point, right, the analytics people don't just tell a pitcher to go out and do something just because. They're telling them to do that because it works, right? If you're telling a guy to go out and throw a breaking ball more than you've ever thrown it, it's because you have a really good breaking ball and nobody can hit it. And why throw it at more? But it's just very hard on arms, and it's impossible almost for these pitchers, these pitching coaches, to get these pitchers to be mechanically perfect, right? When the heart rate goes up, can you be sound enough to stay in your lanes? Everything's connected. The finish is there consistently over and over and over again. It's almost impossible, especially when, you know, the Garrett Coles of the world are throwing almost 100 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. Just the body can't take that, Jeff. You know that well as anybody. And I just don't – I get it that people will say things like that. I just, they've never thrown harder. I just don't know how your body, your elbow, your shoulder, your forearm – it can just take that. And then you add to the mix that you're throwing more breaking balls, right? What do you have to do to that? You've got to really snap it off. If you even hold your hand up as a fan and do that, you can feel it down the back of your arm and towards your tricep and in your elbow. You can imagine a dude against a really good hitter trying to overcompensate, really getting behind that thing and really snapping it off out front. What's it going to do and how's it going to feel? So, yeah, you know, again, it gets back to that. They'd rather have a small sample size because of how good they are instead of you having 10 years and not getting hurt,
yep.
Right? Because they can build around you for that short amount of time and go where you want to go as an organization. For Major League Baseball, forget about what other teams think about those two guys in the American League East. I'm a fan of baseball. I want to see Cole and Judge play all the time. So hopefully it's not a big deal with Cole and it's not a big deal with Judge and they can get back on the field, because I like it that there's a hated Yankees. It's better for baseball.
No, baseball's better when the Yankees are good, there's no doubt.
No question. So having those two dudes on the field a lot of the times is a big deal, and hopefully we see that. And, you know, I want to see what Judge and Soto can do together. That's what I want to see, right? Sort of one's feeding off the other. One's going to get better pitches. One's going to get a lot of chances because that dude's on base a lot. So it's sort of – you know, you're pulling in the same direction I'm pulling in, and you're both great hitters, and one's right-handed, one's left-handed. How do they handle Yankee Stadium? Like, there's a lot of things go into that. So if you're a fan of baseball, you're rooting for those two dudes to be on the field all the time.
Last thing before we let you scoot, Jose Berríos is the starter today. You knock on wood here. You talk about guys who have been able to be healthy throughout their career. I mean, you know, it's the old story, right? Your best ability is availability. A better spring for Jose Berríos than last year, where he came back from the World Baseball Classic, did not have a good World Baseball Classic. There was a lot of concern about him going into the regular season. Now, you know, Ben Nicholson-Smith and other people. I mean, I guess you can look at it. It looks very much as if it would be very easy to line Jose Berríos up to be your opening day starter in Tampa. What are folks saying about him this year? Because it's been a very, we know that he's working on the cutter, but it's been kind of a very quiet, very methodical spring training for Jose Berríos so far.
Yeah, I think he had a goal coming in his spring training, right? He had an offseason. I think he wanted to get in a little bit better shape, you know, to maintain velocity, to maintain a little bit more consistent break on the slider, curveball, whatever you want to call it. I mean, sometimes he can morph it into all three of those depending on release point and how hard he wants to throw it. And I think he's taking care of that. I mean, it looks like he's in elite shape. He's now all of a sudden thinking more, you know, about location of all his pitches instead of mechanics and you know, velocity and those kind of things. And more, it's the Gosman thing. Yes, Gosman, what a good outing for him was. It's exit velocity. And I think Berríos is able now to think more about that than he has the last couple of years. Because it's you know, you're signing the deal, you want to come in, you want to impress, you didn't have it, you were coming off a bad year, you want to come in the next spring raring and ready to go, you don't, now it's a lot of pressure mentally, you're trying to overcompensate for a bunch of things. I just think he's comfortable, he's forgotten about, which is a really good thing for him, and now he can go out and work on certain little things to get better hitters out, right? I think the next graduation for the cutter is to backdoor. Can he backdoor to a lefty? Can he still strike right? You can front hip the sinker. You can backdoor the cutter. You know, you can throw the cutter in if you need a weak contact to the pull side against the lefty to get a, you know, a double play that you need maybe late in the game against a tougher hitter and a tougher team. So, yeah, it's exactly what the doctor ordered. What if they don't have Berríos? Like, now you're talking about this team fighting for fourth place. Like, that's the difference. So, all of these things that he's added, the things, the way he looks, throwing strike one, being unpredictable, maintaining velocity, you know, filling his position, he's in great shape. He'll probably, for me anyway, he's the opening day starter.
Kevin, we're going to let you run. Enjoy the game today. Again, 107 first pitch from TD Bank Ballpark. Springer, Bichette, Turner, Varsho, Kirk Kiermaier, Connor Falefa, Espinal, Horwitz. That is the lineup behind Jose Berríos as they take on the New York Yankees. Kevin, thanks for doing this, man. We'll chat tomorrow.
See you, everybody.
All righty. That's our Kevin Barker. He is in Florida, our Florida correspondent for Blair and Barker. And it is, the wind is a factor, and it's funny because one of the things, Kevin, of course, had spring training in Arizona and Florida, and one of the real differences between Arizona and Florida is the wind. I mean, they're, the wind in Florida can be absolutely hellacious. It's warm, but the wind can be absolutely hellacious. And that's why quite often a lot of guys will tell you they prefer spring training in Arizona to Florida. Plus in Arizona, it's like everything is compacted. There are, I mean, you can visit, gosh, you can visit three or four teams in a day if you really want in Arizona without putting too many miles in your car compared to Florida where, A, the traffic's always bad, and B, there's a little greater space between the spring training sites. Speaking of the New York Yankees, Gerrit Cole undergoing an MRI yesterday. The Yankees saying they will not release details of the MRI till later in the week, saying that they want to get a couple of opinions on the on Gerrit Cole's elbow, which doesn't sound like it's the most optimistic. Doesn't sound like it's the most optimistic report you can get. Of course, the Yankees did have some minor league pitching depth, but they traded that pitching depth to get Juan Soto. And they're in a situation where their salary, their payroll is around $300 million. And they're at the point now where if they go over the luxury tax, they're basically paying, I believe it was 110% of every dollar that they spend over that goes to luxury tax. So they've got some decisions to make, to say the least. And Andy Martino covers the Yankees for Sportsnet New York. He's also got a new book out called The Yankee Way, which is an inside look at the building of the Yankees in the Brian Cashman era. And having glanced at a couple of chapters, there's a lot of good stuff in there about the Yankees. I had no idea. I had no idea how tense the relationship got between Brian Cashman, Derek Jeter, and Brian Cashman and Joe Torre. I just had no idea, but there were times where those guys certainly didn't see eye to eye. Andy Martino joins us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, Blue Jays baseball for you today at 107 on Sportsnet. On Sportsnet Plus, the Yankees and the Blue Jays. From Dunedin, the Jays lineup, we mentioned a little earlier, Jose Berríos will get the start for the Jays. It looks very much as if he will be the opening day starter. The news on Kevin Gausman and Alek Manoah suggesting they are a little behind. Certainly Gausman would have been the obvious choice for opening day starter. They're a little behind. Manoah farther behind than Gausman, apparently. So there's a very good chance Jose Berríos gets the start. In Tampa, the Jays lineup today, Springer, Bichette, Turner, Varsho, Kirk, Kiermaier, Kiner, Falefa, Espinal, and Horowitz. And again, that game starts at, the coverage starts at 1 o'clock, but the game itself starts, I believe, around 1:07 in Dunedin. Some other updates regarding the Blue Jays from manager John Schneider. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., still day-to-day with the left knee contusion. The injury apparently suffered, I guess, on Saturday, making that play in that foul ball. Nothing new with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Just saw him taking BP against Yariel Rodriguez as well. So, and frankly, if you're Vladdy Jr., I don't think they really care how many games he necessarily gets into. And what other updates are there? Yariel Rodriguez throwing BP today. Kevin Gausman's got shoulder fatigue. And Alek Manoah, we talked about the shoulder soreness. He's continuing to play catch. There's no indication as to when he'll get back on the mound. Lots of news out of the Yankees camp in the past couple of days. It used to be a time where the Yankees made news every day. But generally, things go fairly smoothly at Yankees camp, or have in recent years. Not so the past couple of days. Yesterday, of course, the news that Gerrit Cole was undergoing a precautionary MRI on his elbow. And today, a report that Aaron Judge, who has been out of the lineup for a while, is dealing with an abdominal muscle injury, and he had an MRI as well. So we want to talk about the book, The Yankee Way, The Untold Inside Story of the Brian Cashman Era, with our next guest, the author Andy Martino, also the Yankees and Mets reporter for SNY. But Andy, before we get to the book, just wanted to get your take on these two injuries, in particular Gerrit Cole. Look, none of us are doctors, mm-hmm. but we know that it seems as if both sides want more than one opinion on this. We know that the Yankees traded away some of their pitching depth in order to get Juan Soto. We also know that there's Jordan Montgomery and Blake Snell out there. What are the various scenarios for the Yankees? Do you foresee the Yankees pursuing? Should Gerrit Cole be out for any length of time?
Hey, I don't see them pursuing, aggressively pursuing external options. Now, of course, that could change if the Cole news is worse than the Yankees think. The first blush of reaction that I was getting yesterday out of Yankee people was that Cole was having a precautionary MRI, meaning there wasn't some kind of pop in his elbow or instant where he felt like, uh-oh, there's my ligament. The velocity had been fine. The stuff had been pretty much fine. It was the recovery. So obviously that's not nothing. When a guy who's been as durable as Cole feels that he needs an MRI and that he's not bouncing back in March, that's inherently a big deal. But you know as well as I do, Jeff, from covering these things, that there's a sense of like, oh boy, here comes Tommy John sometimes with mm-hmm. these things. And that's not where they are right now. But of course, the Yankees are well aware of the fact that an MRI image could change that perception and make it better or worse than they initially think. But right now, it's looking, they hope, like a shorter absence for Cole, but anxiously awaiting those results just to make sure. Now, if it were a long absence for Cole, I'm not seeing Snell and Montgomery necessarily popping back onto their radar. There's been a lot of talk connecting the Yankees and those guys, but not a whole lot of actual serious discussion between the sides, at least since January. The Yankees made an offer to Snell in January. Snell said no. The Yankees pulled the offer, all normal stuff, right? And then they signed Stroman. So there went a lot of that money that they would have given to Snell. And really, there hasn't been anything much doing since. And with Montgomery, they've gotten mixed signals on whether he would want to come back to play for them. So it's never gotten really hot and heavy there. So that's sort of where all that stands right now.
Yeah, and the Yankees, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think their payroll is someplace in the neighborhood of $300 million. So, I mean, and we know that, you know, I don't think any team, well, maybe other than the Dodgers, I don't even know if the Dodgers, frankly, the Yankees, I mean, the Yankees just aren't throwing money around anymore, are they? There has to be a rhyme and reason to do it. And I think, you know, the Steinbrenner, Steinbrenner's been pretty clear in that regard that, let's put it this way. He's well aware of the luxury taxes, I guess, the way I would put it.
Yeah. And they've gone over it, the highest threshold, this year already. So I guess there's two ways to look at that. One is you're already over, keep going. If you're win now, like win now, that's one way that a lot of Yankee fans in the New York area, certainly feel strongly. And then there's the other way to look at it, which is, they still have to be judicious because now they're in a zone where every dollar they spend is taxed 110%. So this idea of, like, say, sign Snell for 1 year, get him back on the market. Let's say it's 1 year, $35 million for Snell. Well, that's more than $70 million for Snell, which I don't think anyone would argue is, you know, his market value. So, that's where they're at financially, and that's why they have to be careful in their minds about any dollar they spend because it better be worth it given that heavy tax.
And Aaron Judge, that injury is, abdominal injuries, you know, they throw up some red flags as well, but you also do see guys, abdominal / oblique injuries in spring training. Sometimes you see them and they tend not to be as major as when you get them in the middle of the season, right? That's kind of a lot of times where you really worry. This can be just sort of general nagging soreness.
It could, and that's what is being portrayed right now. Judge did do defensive work today in Tampa. He is cautiously optimistic, I guess, about opening day, and we'll see. But really, like you said, there's such a variety of ranges with anything, abdominal, core, side, oblique, anything in that zone can linger, or it can just be a whole sore. So the Yankees are anxiously awaiting. I mean, Cole and Judge are only the two most essential players to their team, maybe in the sport, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the Yankees with those two are legit World Series contenders, and without them are not. It's pretty simple. So it's not been the best week in Tampa.
You know, I want to talk about the book, The Yankee Way, The Untold Inside Story of the Brian Cashman Era. Congratulations, by the way. I've taken a quick look at it. I will certainly take a deeper dive into it because – you know, it's funny, Brian Cashman in an odd sort of way has always intrigued me because he's basically been around since I've been covering baseball. I've had one interview with him of any length, and it was in spring training, and it kind of focused on why the Yankees during Brian Cashman's time have generally been so good when it comes to identifying players in their organization. In other words, knowing who they can move on from, who they got to keep, right? And that's kind of one of the strengths of the organization. But beyond that, for a guy in a major market, I don't know if anybody's actually a GM in a major market actually had the access that you managed to get them. Why do you think Brian's kind of decided to be a little more open now?
Well, that's a really good question, and I didn't spend a whole lot of time on the why as long as I was
Yeah, I don't blame
access.
You.
Yeah. But, I didn't want to think about it too much. But no, I think he I think it's fair to say that he and I have known each other for a long time. I've been covering both New York teams for a long time, and Cashman has his own version of Yankee history that he believes has not been told. And he said that to me, and I'm sure others repeatedly over the years, the history of the Yankees, everybody knows, is wrong. And the nutshell of what he means by that is Gene Michael, Joe Torre, Derek Jeter, I guess, is the big heroes of Yankee history, and George Steinbrenner. And to Cashman, they're unsung heroes in the front office and on the roster who were just as responsible for the dynasty. And when Yankee documentaries have been made and these stories have been told, including Derek Jeter's documentary a few years ago, Cashman just didn't generally believe that the framing was right. And he's been there since the 80s, so... And he's got his own biases, of course, but he would know. He's been there. So he's been saying that for years. And at one point I said, well, how about I try to get it right? You know, if you've got this notion that the wrong heroes have been named and the story is more nuanced, talk to me about it. And from that, it took me 6 months to a year to get him to say yes, even though we know each other pretty well and get along fine, because he's guarded. He is still on the job, which is sometimes tough to open up. And in some cases, he was more open about the past and it was more challenging to pry stuff out of him about the recent past or the present, for obvious reasons. He's still running the team. But I would venture to guess that ultimately he was tempted by the idea that a writer who he knew, and I'd like to think trusted to be not sensationalistic and fair, and certainly not in the tank for him, and he had no approval over what I wrote, but he knows my work, and maybe he thought, hey, here's a chance to get the right story out. That's, I guess ultimately we'd have to ask him, but that's my sense of why he agreed to talk so much to me.
You know, it really is remarkable, because I think of the two most popular people as far as Yankees fans are concerned, I would think, you know, in the era that I got to see the Yankees a lot in the postseason as a beat writer. But Joe Torre and Derek Jeter, beloved. And, yeah, I knew about Cashman and Jeter because that had been a little more public. I had no idea about some of the stress points between Cashman and Torre. So here I've got a GM who has not won a World Series in recent years, has clashed with one of the most popular Yankees of all time, arguably the most popular Yankee manager of all time. He survived the death of the owner, who, you know, I think a lot of people thought that George had Brian's back a bit, and he's still GM of the Yankees. Like, this to me is a remarkable, it's a remarkable story of survival as much as anything else.
And what that turns into because of his continuity and survival to me is beyond the Yankees, the story about the trajectory of the game since the 80s, because this is one individual who got there when he was an intern. Part of his job was to he would get into the office in the morning in the Bronx, get on a voicemail, and the manager of every affiliate would leave a voicemail. This is Wally Moon, manager of Single A Prince William. Andy Stankiewicz let off last night, went 1-for-3 with a walk. And Cashman's writing all this down and then delivering it to the rest of the organization. That's how they got their information on the affiliates. Now, of course, there are high-speed cameras and detailed information and data on every ballpark from here to the Dominican Republic. So the fact that one man has survived that long tells a story about the evolution of the game. Then you get into 2009, 2010, catcher framing on the StatCast era, and this one guy. And I looked at it, and no other organization can rival this. The two that come close are Cleveland, because of Mark Shapiro, who learned from a guy named Hank Peters, who then mentored Antonetti, you know, how that lineage goes. And then the Cardinals, which go back to Walt Jocketty in the 90s, to Mozeliak. I looked at every organization and talked to Shapiro and others about this who've been in the game a long time. In Oakland, I should say, Sandy Alderson to Billy Beane to David Forst.
Right.
Other than that, there's been no organization in the game that has that continuity. So whether or not one thinks they've been successful or partially successful or disappointing, can't argue with the continuity in the story of the history of the game itself that tells. That's why it interested me.
What was the major stress point with him and Joe Torre? Because I have a hard time imagining anybody, everybody has stress points. I shouldn't say that. But, I mean, I just love Joe. Mm-hmm. Joe Torre was like, it was like sitting and talking to your grandfather, for God's sake. I don't know how you could have an issue with him. How did that transpire?
he is a nice man and engaging guy, and brought that touch to the Yankees in the 90s when it was really important that they had that. Everyone around the Yankees under George is so stressed out all the time. The Torrey coming in calm was huge for them. But their breakup, it was a slow drift, and it came with the information age and Cashman's interest in new technologies, perhaps, and as he got more confident and had his own ideas, and as Torrey perhaps started to resent that, and it all came to a head in 2007 in spring training. Ron Guidry was the pitching coach, which Cashman, who liked Ron Guidry as a person, but wanted somebody who was more contemporary at that time. Guidry said, we're going to have every pitcher throw a bullpen for as long as they want, no pitch counts, no rules. And that's how they did it in the 70s. That's how Guidry threw his bullpens. But Cashman and Billy Epler, his assistant GM at the time in the more modern front office, said, I don't know, how many pitches, what's the program, we need to do a program. And Torrey and Guidry kind of went, okay, whatever. And they filled out a sheet that said everyone threw 30 pitches every day. And the front office said, this doesn't sound honest. How could everybody be throwing 30 pitches every time? So they had just installed these scouting cameras all throughout the complex, which are now in every complex, I'm sure. But they were new at the time. So somebody in the front office said, hey, let's look at the camera, see how many pitches everyone threw. And they looked, and a reliever named Colter Bean, who barely pitched in the big leagues when all was said and done, but who was a prospect at the time and was rehabbing from a knee injury, had managed to throw 81 pitches when no one was counting in a rehab program.
Wow.
Next to Mike Messina, who had thrown 30.
Wow.
So Cashman confronted Torrey and said, you said everyone threw 30 pitches, you and Guidry. And look at this, 80 pitches for an injured guy, 30 pitches for a healthy guy. What's going on? Torrey felt that he was being spied on. Cashman felt that he was being lied to. They had a blow up. They patched it up. But that was Torrey's last year as manager, and that's where they ultimately fell out.
Wow. Sounds like a terrific story. Listen, Andy, thanks so much for joining us. Again, congratulations on the book. It's a must-read for any baseball. I mean, the Yankees, basically the history of baseball is the history of the Yankees since Brian Cashman has been there in a lot of ways. And you talk about the development of analytics and you know, the stress points in terms of how you use analytics in old school versus new school, man, it's all encompassed in that organization. Terrific job. Thanks for doing this.
Well, thank you. And thanks for talking about it with me. I appreciate it.
Take care. It's Andy Martino of SNY, and the book is called The Yankee Way. It is the inside and untold story of the Brian Cashman era. And it is, as I said, dude, there's for a team that is always the focal point of so much attention. It's always interesting when new stories are unearthed, things that you didn't realize. And that's the fabulous story about Joe Torrey and the cameras. So there you are. That is it for us today. A reminder, 107 will be the first pitch from Dunedin. It'll be the Jays and the aforementioned New York Yankees. Jose Berríos on the mound for the Blue Jays. Springer, Bichette, Turner, Varsho, Kirk, Kiermaier, Kiner, Falefa, Espinal, and Horowitz. No Vladdy Jr. He has been, I wouldn't say he's been given the day off because he's done some defensive drills, and we saw footage online provided by Ben Nicholson-Smith of him taking batting practice against Yariel Rodriguez, so he has a left knee contusion. I've got to think that if you're the Blue Jays, you just want him to get his work in. And if he gets into a game at some point the next couple of days, great. If he doesn't, so be it, as long as he is getting his work in. That is the most important thing. 107 is the first pitch today. We'll be back again tomorrow from 11 to noon Eastern on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet. Kevin Barker will be back with us. A reminder that you can listen to us via podcast. The pod usually goes up within an hour after the completion of the show. So if you're listening to us via podcast, please leave a rating and a review. And we'll chat again tomorrow.